What I'd like to look at, and I hopefully you got the source sheet, but I'm going to put it up here anyways, and share it with you. What I'd like to look at is something that may seem mundane and may seem very extrinsic to the core story of Sefer Bereishit. But it's something that actually takes us all the way through Bereishit, or through the core parts of Bereishit. And although it, again, seems trite, I think it's actually quite meaningful. And it also may be very instructive. And the question I'm just asking is, where did the Avot live? Very simply, where did the Avot live? So without looking at the page, and just comes, somebody comes up to you on the street, we'll do this in memory of Alex Trebek. Somebody comes up to you and said, and says, this is where the patriarchs lived. So you have to formulate it as a question. Anybody want to suggest what the, where they lived?
Hebron is the typical,
Hebron. You would think Hebron. Good. Anything else? Okay. So we're going to ask
Sheva.
you, what?
Beersheba, Hebron.
Yeah. Or anything else? So
It's
you're
near
right.
Shem.
What? Say it again.
Avram at various points was near Shem.
Okay, so point places near Shechem, good. And that puts us on a latitudinal axis, going a longitudinal, really a north-south axis going from entering the land all the way to leaving the land. You cut a line straight from Shechem, Hebron, Beersheba, it'll work. But you're going to find something interesting because the key word that we want to see is lashevet. Now, lashevet, of course, in Tanakh means to dwell, as opposed to lagur, which in modern Hebrew means to live, but in Tanakh actually has almost the opposite meaning. They translate it as to sojourn, but what it means is to travel around. And that's why a ger is a stranger, right? So now, watch what happens as we follow the story. And again, feel free to chime in. This is now at the Akedah. We're gonna go further back here, but I want to show you something that happens here in the Akedah, because also a little piece of our story as follows. This is in the middle of the Akedah. Now there's a really delicious ambiguity here, as Rav Bezdin Alav HaShalom would describe it, of the use of Na'ar. Because in the first occasion of Na'ar, they're all blue. In the first occasion of Na'ar, who's the Na'ar? Actually, who are the Na'arim?
Yishmael and Eliezer.
Well, we don't know. We don't have any names here, right? Chances are very good that they're not Yishmael and Eliezer, only because at this point, neither one of them would be nearly young enough to be called a Na'ar. But it's two kids, two helpers who come along with Avram. I'm familiar with the Midrash. But simple pshat, two of his caddies. Now, who's the Na'ar there? That's Yitzchak. That's clear. So Yitzchak is considered a Na'ar in this story. All right. Now, afterwards, when Avram lifts the knife, and Vayomer, what does the Malach say? Al tishlach el ha-Na'ar, which means Yitzchak is called a Na'ar. Now, the reason that's all important is because the last pasuk in the Akedah is Vayashov Avraham el Ne'arav. Avraham returned to Ne'arav. Who are Ne'arav? Who are his Ne'arim?
Is servants.
All right,
Servants.
in which case, where's Yitzchak? All right, so we have all the Midrashim that Yitzchak stayed on Har Moriah, and Yitzchak stayed on Mizbeach, and Yitzchak went to Shechem, Eiver, etc. But simple pshat here, where is Yitzchak? So let's go back a little bit to the Akedah story. Avraham puts Yitzchak up on the Mizbeach, ties him down, about to kill him, and then the Malach says, time out, stop, and then all the different parshanut about whether you didn't understand correctly or you passed the test, however you want to explain it, he got stopped. Avram looks up and he sees the ram, and he goes and takes the ram, puts it in place of Yitzchak. Where's Yitzchak at that time?
He's still with Avram.
Where?
on wherever he next to him, wherever Avraham is.
Well, but it doesn't say Avraham took him off the Mizbeach. We have to assume he took him off the Mizbeach.
Yeah.
Because he offered up the ram, Tachat Beno. So where is he? Yitzchak? Yitzchak is now not on the Mizbeach. Right?
Is he still tied up?
Right. No, well, if he's off the Mizbeach, he's not going to be tied up.
So Avraham, we assume, unties Yitzchak, takes him off the Mizbeach, breathes a big sigh of relief, and then goes, takes the ram, slaughters the ram, puts it up, and we can do a whole shiur on how the Akedah doesn't look like a korban, a proper korban anyways, but we'll leave that maybe for next year, Vayerab, or for Hashanah. And so Avraham returns to Ne'arav, and missing, seemingly, is Yitzchak, which leads to all those drashot. But that's not pshat. Pshat is, Vayashav Avraham Ne'arav means Avraham returned to all the Ne'arim, meaning the two boys and Yitzchak. And I'm not saying that Yitzchak went off to be with them from a distance, but he returned to Yitzchak, returned to them, all the Ne'arim, Vayakumu Vayachu Yachtav Be'er Shava. And they go back to Be'er Shava. Vayashav Avraham Be'er Shava. Now, by the way, the simplest explanation of Vayashav Avraham Ne'arav is Avraham v'Yitzchak returned to the Ne'arim. And why mention Avraham? Because consistently in narrative, whenever there is a chief leading something and somebody else following, it's presented in the singular and in the gender of the one leading it. And an example is, of course, Az Yashir Moshe v'nei Yisrael. You have a lot of people singing, and it's Yashir in the singular. And a more glaring example is Vatedaber Miriam ve'Aharon b'Moshe. Miriam and Aharon spoke, and it's in the singular feminine. Because as you see from the earlier consequence, Miriam was the ringleader in it, or whatever you want to call it. Was the person who spoke worse, or spoke, led the speaking, whatever. So the same thing here. Avraham, of course, and Yitzchak went back to the Ne'arim, or Avraham went back to all the Ne'arim. Either way, Yitzchak is with him. And they go back, and Vayeshev Avraham be'er Shava. Critical verb, Vayeshev. They live in Be'er Shava. Okay? Good. The very next passage, after you have that interlude with the birth announcement from up north, is Vayuchay Sarah ta-ta-ra-ta-ra. And then in this week's parsha, Vatamot Sarah b'kiryat arbahi Chevron be'eretz Kanan. Where did Sarah die? In Chevron. All right? So we have to assume, where is Avraham? In Hebron.
In
Sarah. But wait a second. Didn't he just go to Be'er Sheva? It gets more complex. Vayavo Avraham, so the simplest psalm, Vayavo Avraham, doesn't mean he came from somewhere else out of town, but rather he came to the site of where they were going to do the mourning, etc. Or Vayavo, like Rashi says, nit'orer, meaning he stirred himself to do it, not that he actually traveled anywhere. Okay. And now, Avraham buys land, and he's there. However, what happens next in the next pasuk? Avraham zaken ba bayamim. Avraham now is now old and thinks he's going to die. Zaken ba bayamim. Throughout Tanakh, you find it in Yeshua Yud Gimel. You find it in Shmuel Aleph Chet. You find when somebody at least thinks they're going to die, you find this phrase. You find it also with Yitzchak, sort of, when he goes blind. So who does Avraham speak to? He speaks to his servant, his top servant. We'll never know his name. And he makes him take the oath. Now, the servant goes, we know the whole story. He comes to Haran. He comes to the well. He prays his prayer. Rivka shows up. She gives water to him. And all the deal goes well. And then he comes into the house and they offer him food and he says, I'm not going to eat until I tell you my story. What's the story he tells? Hashem blessed my master Avraham. He's, of course, out of earshot of Rivka. She doesn't know that this guy's a slave. And then, Vatelet Sarah Eshet Aduni Vein La Aduni. Okay, so Sarah Eshet Aduni, in other words, that's the way he refers to Sarah. Now, Sarah's dead, which means that when Sarah died, Avraham and Sarah are still together. Not that we would think differently, but just to confirm that. And she has a son. Now, Avraham is living in Hebron. Avraham bought land in Hebron. Avraham buried Sarah in Hebron. Sarah was in Hebron when she died. So the family settled in Hebron. If you recall, at the end of the Akedah, Avram went back to Beersheba. Now, there's a very easy explanation of that. Avram lives in Hebron and goes to the Akedah, and for some reason, when he finishes the Akedah, he goes back to Beersheba, meaning he goes to Beersheba, and he stays in Beersheba for a while, recovery from it, for whatever reason, maybe. But there's something else going on, as follows. The slave successfully negotiates for Rivka's hand. They return the Rivka and her girls and her nursemaids and the slave and all of his men, get on the camels and go back. Where do they go back to? So take a look at Samach Aleph. Fatakum Rivka v'naroteha. Okay. And now they're coming back, and they should be coming back to Hebron, correct? Avram sent the slave from Hebron. By the way, back in the first purple Pasuk, who is Adoni in this Pasuk? Who is the slave's master in this Pasuk? Who, it's very clear. Who's the master in this pasuk?
Avram.
He's Avram's slave. Sarah, the wife of my master, gave a son to my master. My master is Avraham. And throughout the tefillot, the slave says, do chesed for my master Avram. And thank you for doing chesed for my master Avraham. You've led me to the house of the family of my master Avraham. It's over and over and over. He is Eved Avraham. Now, if he's Eved Avraham, and Avram sent him on a mission, and he's coming back. He should be coming back to Avram to Hebron. Instead, look at the green. V'Yitzchak ba mibo be'er lachai roi. Yitzchak comes from his regular comings at be'er lachai roi. Just a moment, a little travel, not advisory, a little travel plug for be'er lachai roi. What is be'er lachai roi? Be'er lachai roi, if you recall, is a well in the desert outside of Beersheba in the North Sinai, going towards Egypt, meaning outside of Beersheba, but going in the direction of Egypt. And why is Be'er Lachai Roi an important place? Because when Hagar ran away from the house because Sarah was mistreating her, she ended up in the desert, and the Malach showed up at a Be'er and told her what to do, and she called the Be'er Be'er Lachai Roi because God has seen me there. And it became evidently a family shrine because Yitzchak now goes there regularly. But Yitzchak goes there regularly to a Be'er that's outside of Beersheba. All right? Important to note that. Now, Yitzchak lives in the Negev. And now, which means that area is also called a Sadeh. That's going to become important a little bit later on. Okay? And the entourage is coming on camelback, and they and Rivka sees Yitzchak, falls off the camel. We're all familiar with that. And what happens when she turns to the slave and says, "Who's that very impressive guy out there?" We assume. And this is near Beersheba. Vayomer ha'eved hu adoni. What does the slave say? Hu adoni, which means what happened. Who is now this slave? Who's his master?
Yitzchak,
right? Yitzchak is his master. So what happened? Is Avram his master? Is Yitzchak his master? So simple pshat here is that Avraham sent the slave to go get a wife and said, and when you bring the wife to Yitzchak, you now become Yitzchak's slave. It's kind of part of the marriage arrangement. Okay. But I want you to notice something else. In the entire story of the death, mourning, burial, negotiations for land, etc., of Rivka, of Yisara, there is not one single mention of Yitzchak. Yitzchak is not there. Yitzchak is not there. He's not mentioned at all. On the other hand, when it comes to the marriage of Rivka and Yitzchak, Avram is not there. Avram's nowhere to be seen. All right? We'll hear from Avram yet after this, when he marries Keturah and he has more kids and then he dies and Yitzchak and Yishmael come to bury him in Hebron. But where's Yitzchak? So what seems to have happened here is after the Akedah, Avram brings Yitzchak to Be'er Sheva. Yitzchak lives in Be'er Sheva. And Avram goes back to Hebron and lives out the rest of his life in Hebron, away from Yitzchak, with Sarah, in their old age. And then, at some point, he sends a slave to go find a wife. He never sees the slave again. The slave brings the wife to Yitzchak in Be'er Sheva, and then he becomes the slave of Yitzchak. He's handed off father to son. Okay, let's see what it's all about. So let's go back to the beginning. At the very beginning, when after the Lech Lecha, Avram starts coming to the land, and the first place he comes to is Shechem. He does not settle in Shechem at all. He arrives in Shechem, and God appears and says, this is the land I'm giving you. Areka is the land that I'm giving to your seed. Avram builds a Mizbeach, and Avram continues traveling south. Builds another Mizbeach between Beit El Hana'ai. The first place that the verb leshevet, to dwell, shows up is at the end of Perek Yod Gimel. And this is after Avram traveled and traveled, and then famine went down to Egypt, and then traveled back with all the wealth, and moved back and still hasn't settled down, is traveling around. Hakananiva Priziyaz Yoshev Baaretz, there's nowhere for them to settle. And Lot and Avram have the problems, or their shepherds have the problems. They separate, and after they separate, look at source 4. Vayahal Avram, after they separated, Vayavo, Vayeshev Be'elonei Mamre Asher Bechevron. The first place that Avram settles is an Elonei Mamre. Elonei Mamre is a busy area. Meaning there's a lot of people. Somebody's got a lot of noise going on. Can you please mute? All right, somebody's got a lot of noise out there. Please mute. Thanks. And there are other people. There's Aner Eshkol Mamre. He's making treaties with people. He ends up negotiating to buy land there. He meets with the Amorites. They know him. He's a Nasi Elohim Betochenu. His life in Hebron is a life of involvement with community. He's in the center of things. That's where he settles in. Okay, and we know that he makes treaties because we hear that Aner Eshkol Mamre are Baalei Brit Avram. They are treaty partners with Avram. So he's interacting with people. Okay, in the next source, we find that Avram is residing in Elonei Mamre. This is when he hears about the war and about Lot was being taken captive, and he his troops, and he goes to war. Good. All right. Now, on the other hand, in Perek Tet Zayin, after Brit Ben Avtarim, Avram and Sarai are living, and Sarai says to Avram, I don't have any kids. Take Hagar. He gets Hagar pregnant. Hagar is uppity. He hands Hagar back to Sarai, and Sarai then mistreats Hagar. What does Hagar do? Hagar runs out in the desert. Where does she run to? She runs to
Be'er Sheva.
She runs to what becomes Be'er Lacharoi, which means they're living in Be'er Sheva now. Why are they living in Be'er Sheva? Like, when did they move? Avram has been living in Hebron. That's the place he lives. He dwells. He traveled around a lot and settled in Hebron. He settled in Hebron, and he's in Hebron. Very nice. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, he's in Be'er Sheva. Why? Now, you move ahead and you get to the Brit Milah, and Avraham, we don't know exactly where he is at the Brit Milah, except we find out at the beginning of Vayera, Vayera Elav Adonai Be'elonei Mamre. There he is in the plains of Mamre in Tel Rameda in Hebron. So he moved back to Hebron. So wait a minute, let's kind of put this together. Avram comes to the country, travels, famine, Egypt, back, travels, Lot separates. Lot separates, and then Avram settles down in Hebron. Avram stays in Hebron for a while, through the war, Brit Ben Avtarim. And then at some point, when Hagar is pregnant, he moves to Be'er Sheva. They're in Be'er Sheva for a while. Yishmael is born, and then 13 years later, you find them back in Hebron. Why is that? Now, after the whole scene that took place with the destruction of Sodom, Avram goes to Arzanega, Vayeshev ben Kadeshev, and Shur Vayagor Bigrar. Now, you would be tempted to say that Vayeshev means he settled down, but the text tempers that and says Vayagor Bigrar, which means he travels around in Grar. That's the Plishti territory. Okay? And now we come to the story of the birth of Yitzchak. So let's follow Avram's travels. Avram traveled, finally settled down in Hebron. Hunked, when Hagar is pregnant, we find that they're in Beersheba. 13 years later, punked, they're in Hebron. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, they're back in Beersheba. Because what happens? Yitzchak is born, Yitzchak is weaned, it's all very nice. And at the weaning party, Sarah sees what Yishmael is doing, or what Ben Hagar is doing, unclear, and she insists they get sent out. Where do they get sent out from? Take a look. They're back in Beersheba. And Avram's in Beersheba. And right after that, Avimelech makes a brit with him in Beersheba, and they call it Beersheba because they took a shvuah there. They're back in Beersheba. Okay. When Avraham dies, though, where is he buried? Me'arat HaMachpelah. Yitzchak and Yishmael come, and they bury him in Me'arat HaMachpelah. But in the meantime, Yitzchak goes back to Be'er Lachai Ro'i. All right? Things are a little bit stranger. Where are they living? Now, by the way, we remember we heard that the area around Beersheba is called Sadeh. So we hear that Esav is an Ish Sadeh. We say that that Esav comes Mina Sadeh, and that's when he's hungry and the whole thing with the porridge, etc. What's going on? And by the way, as we continue through, we see that that in the story where Yitzchak wants Esav to go and hunt and get him game so he can give him a bracha, they're still in Beersheba. When Esav wants to kill Yaakov, I mean, that's what he says. It's temper. He wants to kill Yaakov, and they send him away. Where do they send him away from? How does the parsha start? Vayetze Yaakov mi Beersheba. They're back in Beersheba. So Yaakov leaves, running away from Beersheba. But when he returns, where does he return? All those years later, he returns to see Yitzchak where? In Kiryat Arba, in Hebron. So where's Yitzchak living? Yitzchak's in Beersheba. Yaakov runs away from Beersheba to Haran. And all those years later, comes back and reunites with his father in Hebron. By the way, these are the only two cities that are players here. He never settles in the Plishti land. He travels around. He never settles in Shechem or between Beit El and Ai. He travels around. These are the two cities he settles in. And just to top it off, where does Yaakov come back to and settle when he returns from Haran? Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Mugurei Aviv Beretz Canaan. And where is he? He's in Hebron. How do I know that? Because when Yaakov sends Yosef off on that fateful trip, he sends him Me'im at Hebron. So what's going on in this story? Back and forth. So let's talk about the two cities. It's a tale of two cities. It's not London and Paris. And I'm not Charles Dickens. It's a tale of two cities. What kind of city is Hebron? Like I said, we see from the text what kind of city Hebron is. And we also happen to know from external evidence. Hebron is a relatively bustling city. Hebron ultimately becomes the capital of Shevet Yehuda. Hebron is a busy city. People come to Hebron. Travelers come through Hebron. Avram has treaty partners who live in Hebron. Hebron has a city council. Hebron has real estate laws, land laws, etc. Okay, what kind of city is Beersheba?
Desert.
What?
The desert.
That's
it's the last city.
And what kind of city is it?
I would think it's empty.
Right.
Nothing.
Right. It's an outpost. It's actually a border town between seemingly the desert and the beginning, and by the way, even today, and the more settled area. It's also a border town, as you find, between the Plishtim and the Canaanim. Because that's where Avimelech comes to make his britot, both with Avram and Yitzchak. He comes to Beersheba. Beersheba is not a town. Beersheba is like a place where you set up tents. It's a KOA. Now, let's see what happens in this story. Let's see what happens in this story. Avraham comes to Canaan, and Avraham is faced, and this is the implication for us part. Avraham is faced with a huge mission, which, if you think about it on an educational level, is a mission which carries within an inherent contradiction, and there is the challenge. On the one hand, Avraham is supposed to raise a nation, which after many different attempts, turns out to be through his own children. He's supposed to have children and supposed to raise those children to continue the mission and to spread the word and to be a source of blessing to the world. On the other hand, he's supposed to interact with other people and be a source of blessing. Now, why is that a contradiction? Because if you want to interact with heads of state and with chieftains and with people who have influence and really impact on them, then you have to live in New York. You have to live in Washington. You have to live in the center of things. On the other hand, as we've all seen, the price for a very public persona is that the private life is threatened. And how many great leaders do we have who weren't successful in raising a great family? Look no further than Shmuel Anavi, Eliyahu Kohen, Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's own grandson was a Kohen Lavodah Zarah. It is a really difficult task to devote yourself to the public while also being a successful parent. And in the same way, it's very difficult to live in a place where you can really impact on people and still raise a successful family to continue that mission. Because you're there to impact on people because they haven't yet been impacted. They represent the low culture that you're trying to raise. But if your kids are growing up there, then they're affected by that culture. It's one of the things that I find extremely impressive about the whole Chabad enterprise. And I have a lot of disagreements I have with Chabad. But one of the things I find very impressive about them is you can go to the middle of nowhere and find a family living there in an environment where people, where everything's foreign to Judaism. And they're trying their best, and often with really amazing success, to impact on people around them, Jews and non-Jews, about the importance of values. And yet, in their homes, you see often that they are raising kids who are holding to those values. Now, it doesn't always work, and it's a difficult thing. And there are a number of them who go there, and they have kids, and the minute their kids are of educable age, they either send them to New York or somewhere, or they move. It's not so simple. But that's the challenge. So what does Avram do? Avram negotiates the challenge beautifully. Watch what he does. He travels around the land, and he finally chooses to live in New York. In Manhattan, he moves to Hebron, right in the middle of things. And he's right in the middle, and he's interacting with chieftains and all sorts of important people. And he's there as long as he and Sarah have no children. What happens is the minute that Sarah says, here's Hagar, and then Hagar gets pregnant, we now find them in Beersheba. Where are they in Beersheba? Avram says, now it's time to raise a family. I can't raise a family among the Canaanim. Their values are terrible. Their lifestyle is terrible. Their behavior is despicable. I have to impact on them, but right now I got to raise a family. So I'm going to go out to the middle of nowhere. That's Beersheba. And he's in Beersheba. But after Yishmael is raised, they move back to Hebron. Now we're ready to be in the middle of things again. And so the three guys come to visit them in Hebron and tell them, Sarah's going to have a baby. Where's the next place we find them when Yitzchak is born? Back in Beersheba. We're raising a family again. Got to go back to Beersheba. And that's where they stay until the Akedah. What happens at the Akedah? The Akedah, in a very strong sense, and Kierkegaard wrote about this painfully but beautifully, in a sense created a rupture that was irreparable between Avram and Yitzhak. We never find them in the same place again. We certainly never find them talking to each other again. But on a much milder level, on a much more positive level, the Akedah was the moment of maturation of Yitzhak into his own independent person. He's no longer Vayichushnehem Yachdav. He's no longer tagging after Avraham. He's now his own person. And so Avram has finished raising his family. He goes back to Hebron with Sarah. That's where they're supposed to be. That's where they're going to impact on the world. In the meantime, Yitzchak has to do his own growing up and marriage and start a family. So he's in Beersheba. When Rivka comes with the slave, she comes to Beersheba because that's where Yitzchak is, ready to raise a family. And they try and they try and they try and they try. And they finally have kids and they stay in Beersheba until their moment of separation. When's their moment of separation? When Yaakov comes in and says, Anochi Esav b'chorecha, and when Esav has his explosion, and when Yitzchak has to send Yaakov away, and then Esav, we find out in Perek Lamed Vav, leaves, and now Yitzchak and Rivka can move back to Hebron. Now they move to Ir HaAvot, because that's where we're supposed to live and impact on people. And they move to Hebron. And so when Yaakov returns, he returns to Hebron, because that's the place. The interesting thing is what happened in the meantime. In the meantime, Yaakov has raised a family in Haran. He has already successfully raised a family. However successfully he did, he raised a family already in the middle of a foreign environment. So Yaakov doesn't need to bring his kids back to Beersheba. And therefore Yaakov goes straight to Hebron and stays in Hebron. And that's where he raises his family. What we see here, or he continues raising his family, what we see here is that the two cities, which really represent two diametrically opposed environments, an environment of integration with everybody in society, the best and the worst, but including the worst, and separation and exclusion. And that Avram understood that the mission that he was being sent on really demanded of him to take both and negotiate when to be where. And so the only two cities that Avram actually lives in, not travels around and sojourns, but lives in, are Manhattan and Podunk. The middle of everything and the middle of nowhere. And the camera follows him as an instructive model for us about how we need to find that balance between our own impact on the world around us and the safe cocoon of our family. Now, of course, we have all sorts of advantages today, which is we have the opportunity to interact with all sorts of people from right here in my dining room where I'm teaching you in different parts of LA and in Beersheba, in Beit Shemesh. So we do have that opportunity, but it means that on a mindset level, we have to really create a wall between our interactions with the outside world, which sometimes need to expose us to those whose value systems are, shall we say, could use some tuning up. And then when we come back and we raise our own families and we impact on our closer circle, it's a whole different story. So just sort of a way to look at the where they lived as really being a model of how we try to negotiate that difficult passage.